let's keep him about another minute to show up other evidence, and then if he doesn't show up, I'll start the meeting. I call the meeting of the Story County Board of Health to order today. Special note to the public, due to recommendations to limit gatherings to no more than 10 people in order to slow the spread of the COVID-19 virus, public access to the meeting will be provided via conference call to listen and participate in the meeting. Members of the public who would like to call in may dial 918-221-0224 and enter 222-592-9465#, when prompted for the access code. If you're calling in and you have an iPhone, we ask that you mute your phone if possible. Audio recordings of all board meetings will be posted on our website, www.storycountyiowa.gov, shortly after the meeting is concluded. You may access these recordings at any time by clicking on the Meetings and Agendas button on the home page. Okay? So like we did on our last telephone meeting, I'd first like everyone to kind of check in to so that we know they're here. One more call. Mark Speck, are you here?
I'm here.
Mark, great. John Kluge?
Here.
Molly Lee?
Here.
Louisa?
Here.
And Lisa Heddens?
Here.
Very good. Okay, so, and all votes will need to make kind of a roll call vote. Is there anyone else on the line or that would like to identify themselves?
Good evening, Heather Bomb.
Okay. I didn't hear that last one. What?
That way. Story.
Oh, okay. Okay. Anyone else?
Keith Morgan from Story County Emergency Management.
Very good.
Eugenia Hartzook, Iowa State University Extension, Story County.
Oh, yes, thank you.
And this is Jess Soderstrom, also at ISU Extension, Story County.
Thank you very much.
Wade Kaler, Story County Fair Association.
Okay.
And Michelle Gibson, Story County Fair Association.
Very good. Anyone else out there? Well, Stephanie Jones is there. Is Margaret James there?
No, she wasn't going to call in this time.
I'm okay with that. Okay. All right. Sounds good. So first thing is we need approval of the agenda as printed. I need a motion to approve.
So moved.
That's Margaret Beck. And John Kluge, second. All those in favor, I'm going to go down the line with your names. Mark?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Molly?
Yes.
Louisa?
Yes.
And John? Yes. Okay. And now we have the approval of the minutes. You've got a copy of the minutes that were sent to you. Are there any changes in the minutes? If no changes are brought up, I would like to take a motion to approve.
So moved.
So moved.
John.
Okay. John moved and Louisa seconded. Any further discussion on approval of the minutes? Hearing none, we'll go down in our vote. Mark?
Yes.
John?
Yes.
Molly?
Yes.
Louisa?
Yes.
And John? Yes. Okay, consent agenda. All items listed under the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. No separate discussion of these items unless a request is made prior to the time the board votes on the motion, and we did not receive any requests. So the four things on the consent agenda were the reopening guidance for county offices, the consideration of COVID-19 face covering policy, consideration of COVID-19 daily self checklist, and consideration of updated weakness or updated wellness policy. I'll let people know that I reviewed all those and they sound pretty straightforward to me and they make a lot of sense. I need an approval. I I guess we're not supposed to discuss. Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion to approve?
So moved.
Okay, John Kluge, I need a second.
Second, Dr. Lisa.
Okay, and Molly, second. Any other discussion or questions? Okay, all those in favor? Mark? Mark's back?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. John?
Yes.
Molly?
Yes.
Louisa?
Yes.
And John Passion, yes. Okay. All right. Number five, public forum. This is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Is there anyone out there in the public on the phone who wish something else to be discussed? Hearing none, we're going to move on. Okay, so I just want to, we're having this, just to let people know, we're having this meeting mostly because I feel that these items need to be discussed before our routine scheduled meeting in 2 weeks. And also, to be quite honest, we're going to have a lot of other things to talk about besides COVID-19. So it's kind of nice to have this meeting separately to talk about these issues. The first thing that we're going to talk about is the public health COVID-19 update by Les White. So Les, it's, you're on.
Thank you, Dr. Paxton. Just to let everybody know, as of current today, we have 79 cases in Story County. Of those cases, two of them are hospitalized, so I feel pretty fortunate about that. I did provide some different data to you guys this time that I haven't in the past, but just to kind of give you an idea, you see how our cases are increasing. But to also give you an idea of how many cases that we are looking at per week. And there has been just a gradual increase. The week of May 3rd so far is our highest, where we had 19 cases at that point in time. And then this past week, we had 18. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that. And as things open up, we'll see if that continues to trend upward, it levels out, or if it will decline. In addition, I gave you another chart. I know I've had some questions in relationship to are there hot spots? And really, truly, we've been pretty fortunate. Again, we've only had one assisted living that had a few cases. Otherwise, we have not identified any hot spots. As you look at the graph, you can see that Ames, of course, has the most cases, which is what you would expect in relationship to the population. Also, in addition, then, the last chart that I provided to you gives you an idea of where we're at in relationship to total cases, but also those cases that have recovered, and again, there in the number of deaths in our county. And again, we've been fortunate in relationship to only having one death. So currently, as of last week, again, I mentioned we had 75 cases. Of those, though, 58 of those have been recovered. So again, we're doing pretty well in that area. I also went back and looked at the data to kind of see, again, how many of these are families where we're seeing more than one person in a household. And again, there were only six families since we started this journey back in March that we have identified that have more than one individual in a household with a positive COVID test. Does anybody have any questions about that data?
Yeah, Les, first of all, this is John Passion talking. First of all, that data that you supplied us, I think, is very good and very helpful for all of us. I particularly like the one that gave us a rundown of weekly cases of COVID-19 in Story County. I think we have to watch that closely to see when things start to go down, and hopefully that will be soon. The other thing I had a question about is, are age case scenario similar to what they're seeing throughout the state, or is ours significantly different? Like, are we seeing more young people or more people in the 80s, or is it very similar to what's on the IDPH website?
It is very similar to what's on the IDPH website, where most of our individuals are the middle-aged and the not the oldest adults, but the next to the oldest adults. So that's where we are seeing, again, most of our cases as well.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a question. So how many of these are hospitalized then? With which age range?
Yeah, we have two that are hospitalized, and the two that are hospitalized, one is in the older adult range, that 60 to 80-ish, and then we do have one that is in the middle age range, between, I think it's about 40 to 60. There's quite a range, age range in those, but those are the only two at this point today that I'm aware of that are hospitalized.
Are any on ventilators?
Yeah, both of these individuals are.
Okay.
This is Mark Speck. Neil, how long hospitalized?
So, Mark, I believe both of these individuals have been hospitalized for at least 2 weeks.
Oh,
and that doesn't seem to be so uncommon with the COVID-19 individuals. They seem to be hospitalized for a few weeks and even on ventilators for a few weeks. But, yeah, both of these, I know it's been 2 weeks, if not a little bit longer.
Okay, thank you.
The only other thing I want to share is a couple things with you. I like to bring to your attention our surrounding counties. Because when you look, Boone County, they have 44 cases. But when you look at Marshall County, just east of us, they have 816 cases. Tama, you go over one, which is really still in our Mary Greeley service area, they have 361 cases. Jasper has 254, and then of course we know Polk County has 3,001. Hardin and Hamilton, just north of us, they only have 13 cases each, so they're doing very well. The Iowa Department of Public Health just came out. They do have some new information I thought I would share just briefly with you. One of them is, I know everybody has heard about the Test Iowa. Now they have a new call center. We do get a lot of questions about Test Iowa. Sometimes the results have been delayed and those types of things. So now we have a specific number that we can give them so that they can call directly and get their questions answered, which is very nice. They also came out with some guidance related to reporting of the multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. That just came out as well. They've also expanded their testing for the state hygienic lab for children, as well as staff working with children that have a fever or any respiratory syndrome. And then they also have started some testing criteria for serology testing. And so the individuals that have had a confirmed COVID-19 test or suspected can now have a serology testing if it's 7 days post-symptom onset. Or they will do that also if you've had COVID and you want to donate your plasma with the antibodies. That's another way. And then they also said that healthcare workers or essential service personnel can also have this type of testing done as well. The last thing, I think since the last time we talked, our trace back opportunities have changed a little bit. And we now are going back, and once we visit with the individual, we go back 48 hours prior to the onset of their symptoms or prior to their testing date. And then anybody that they have been in contact with for greater than 30 minutes and closer than 6 feet, then we go back and we touch base with all of those individuals. This does go up until 10 days after their testing. So we've been, it's been getting better and the tests are coming to us sooner, so we're not getting too far into those 10 days. What we are finding right now is that traceback it's really not been too bad. We've been able to keep that within our department ourselves. I think it's because people are practicing those social distancing and they are staying home if they're sick. But if it would become too great, the Iowa Department of Public Health, this is something that they could take over for if need be. The other change that they made is their isolation recommendations, where it used to be 7 days post where you had no symptoms from the first day of onset of your symptoms or from your testing date. They have extended that now to 10 days. So it's 10 days and at least 72 hours with no fever. Otherwise, I think
whichever is longer.
Correct. Really. Otherwise, the other things that we continue to do is we continue really to stay in contact with all of our nursing homes. We touch base with them, as well as assisted living group homes, make sure that they have all that PPE that is needed, answer their questions and those kinds of things. Like I said, we continue to manage all of our own cases. That way it really gives us a good feel for what's going on in our county. We work, of course, with the Story County EOC, and currently what we're looking at is what's it going to be like October 1st? Will there be a surge? As we look at bringing the students back, what does that look like in relationship to testing, and what does that look like in relationship to contact tracing? And we are working with Iowa State in relationship to that. So hopefully in a couple of weeks, I'll have a few more answers for you when I visit with you at that time. Grant dollars, I do have some COVID dollars that were given to us. And then I also had some emergency preparedness. And so we will be working on replenishing our PPE supplies. We have put those orders in because it does take I don't anticipate that we'll get those orders still to early fall. Otherwise, really for us, I believe in Story County, our testing still seems to be somewhat limited. I guess it's just not real readily available. And individuals can go to Test Iowa, and the closest place for that would be Des Moines. So I believe that was what all I was going to share with you this evening. So I'll be happy to entertain any questions.
This is Lisa. I have one question.
Sure.
How are the nursing homes and assisted living places doing with dealing with COVID? Are there any patients from nursing homes or assisted living?
There have been with assisted living. Now we consider but we've been fortunate not to have any outbreaks. Now in our assisted living, there was what we consider an outbreak because there was more than 3 cases, but the Iowa Department of Public Health doesn't classify assisted living as long-term care facilities. So the long-term care facilities are managing well. They may have had we've had a couple calls maybe where some of their staff have had some issues. We've probably had more calls in relationship to group homes and those types of individuals, and we've been able to reach out to them and help them. The one thing that we did do with all nursing homes, you know, when this first started, is contact them and give them PPE and those kinds of things. But also what we've done is we had some of the PAP or respiratory type devices that you can wear when you're caring for a COVID-19 patient. Because they don't have everybody fit tested for the N95 mask that you need to be fit tested for when caring for the patient. So we loaned out our PAPers that we had, and we gave two to each of the long-term care facilities in Story County so that if a COVID positive patient is identified, then they have that the proper PPE right there for them to manage that case. So again, they've been doing a great job, and we haven't seen a lot of cases with those individuals.
That's great to hear. Thank you.
Another question. Your contact tracing, how many positives have you found?
We have not found any positive with that. This just started, I want to say, maybe two weeks ago. But the thing we have to keep in mind is, you know, we call them and we contact them, tell them the signs and symptoms and those types of things. But we haven't seen yet those names that we've contacted come back around with a positive test. But, you know, there's always that chance that they don't go get tested because they're like, you know, they know they've been exposed. Maybe they know the symptoms and they feel like that's what they have, so they don't go get tested. I'm not really sure about that, but I know at this point in time we haven't seen that.
Thank you.
Did we have any cases today or yesterday? Do you know?
I do know. We had, let's see, over the weekend, I think we had two on Saturday, maybe three on Sunday. We didn't have any cases today, which is very unusual for us.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, you know, we're all waiting for it to go down. This is John Passion asking a question. With PPE, specifically N95s, will there be a source for clinics to be able to get those? We are doing okay right now, but we're looking at dealing with COVID-19 through the summer, and it's going to be bad in the fall, so we're not sure we're going to let down our guard in pediatrics. Is there a place that we can get or a way that we can apply for more N95s?
You know, Dr. Patton, I can I'll connect. We visit with your materials management director frequently.
Okay.
And I'll connect with her, Dr. Passion, and because I know Mary Greeley did just put in an order. Unfortunately, the N95s that they purchased were too big and could not be fit tested for anybody, so they had to send them back. So they're in the process of looking for some more N95s. And we had a vendor as well that we were checking out for public health. So I'll share that with your director of materials.
Good. If you could do me a favor, if you could, if you email them, could you just email me just a CC copy of it?
I sure will.
Because our nurses are very, our nurse manager is very nervous. We're fine right now, but she's concerned it won't last. So, okay.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Wes, I want to say the general news you give us is good right now, so I'm happy about that. I will wait and hope that it really starts to decrease. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Les, this is Lisa Hens. I do have a question.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if you would have the answer yet or home, but what are you kind of looking at for your outlook with more businesses and stuff opening up for when you might potentially see a greater increase? You know, because people are out socializing more.
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking at that a potential kind of resurgence or uptick might take 2 weeks, 4 weeks? What's that kind of potential time frame you're looking at?
I would think we would see that within the 2 weeks, because typically, you know, once you're exposed, I think it's anywhere from 2 to 14 days that you're going to start to develop those symptoms. So I think we would see that uptick at least in a couple weeks. I think, Lisa, what we are probably a little bit more concerned about is thinking about the students coming back. And
sure.
That's why we are looking for that surge more maybe in October. And that may even be a little bit late. It may be a little earlier. We understand, and I have a call this next week with Iowa State, but I think they're opening up the dorms August 15th with the students planning to come back August 25th. But they seem to be have lots of teams in place to do lots of planning. So hopefully things will go well with all of that.
Great, thank you. And then one other question I had, with the cases that you've seen, people that are positive or that have had to have been hospitalized, not just the two currently, but the others that have been hospitalized, has it been more solely the respiratory issue, or have they had some of the other symptoms that they're kind of saying now that there are other symptoms that can be associated, not just the respiratory?
Yeah, I think most of ours have been respiratory.
Have it? Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Last, I have a question for you.
Go ahead, Mom.
This is Mommy. So related to the Iowa State reopening, I was just wondering if you feel like you have enough, I guess, input and information on what they are planning into the fall. I know that Tevlin, I think you guys have a good relationship with, so I just wondered what the communication was like and what your exchanges with Iowa State as they're considering these plans for opening in the fall.
Yeah, no, I feel very comfortable. I'm going to meet with Aaron, the incident, you know, the leader of their incident command team. So we're going to have a call this week, and then she's going to kind of fill me in. We also have somebody from Iowa State that sits in on our EOC meeting that Keith leads. So I think we have some good ways and good communication with them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Mark Speck, Lee. We have two kinds of masks that we wear. You know, we have some of those N95s that we wear that have the two straps and that are pretty well fitted. But we also have some of those, like the person with their doctor, one that just, you know, they kind of go over your nose and mouth and behind your ear. When should you wear what? When is there a certain time where you should wear one versus the other?
Well, I guess, Mark, it kind of depends on the situation or what you're involved in. And it was interesting. We learned a lot about N95 masks during this time, but there's those that are healthcare N95s, but there's those that are industrial N95s. And so my guess is if you're in a home doing different kinds of industrial types of things, probably that N95. But if you're in your office and just, you know, maybe talking with a client closer than within your 6 feet, then that surgical mask would be adequate for something like that.
Okay, yeah, we've been able to get the N95s, but we haven't had, I'm not sure where to get those nurses or surgical type ones at.
Yeah, no, Mark, this is John Passion. Those hospital ones are a little bit harder to get, though they're much more comfortable than an N95. Louisa sent us a paper that talked about mitigation factors or things that you could do to help prevent COVID-19, and I read that, and it was like oozing with common sense about when to wear a mask, when not to wear a mask, when to be concerned. Did you get that? Did you get a copy of that?
Yeah, I think I did. I was going to go back and look at that.
I think it's not that bad of a read. I think it will be that will give you very, very good advice.
Okay, I'll go back and look at that.
Okay. Great. Anything else from us?
Just thank you for a great job and a great report to us, too.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a great team that I work with.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we'll move on to our second item. Discussion and consideration of guidance from the Board of Health for mitigating COVID-19 risk when Story County Fair opens. This, just to give you a little bit of a preemption on this, this was brought up to me by Les about what kind of advice we can give to the people who run the Story County Fair, how to prevent the spread of COVID-19 when the fair opens and what they should do. Please understand that this will be kind of a, anything we say, we won't be able to force anyone to do, but I thought this would be a good discussion that I think everyone in the Board of Health should be a part of, just purely because of the expertise that each of us bring to the table. So that's why I put that on the Board of Health meeting today. So, with that in mind, who from the Story County Fair wants to start this discussion?
Hi, this is Jess Soderstrom. I am with Story County Extension and Outreach. I am the 4-H County Youth Coordinator. I would like to just open a discussion and then get some guidance from the Board of Health for how we can provide a safe and positive experience for our 4-H youth while having their exhibits judged if it happens during the Story County Fair. I did provide a draft of a document to the Board of Health that addresses events that the 4-H program is directly involved with and the Story County Extension program. It does not address activities sponsored or organized by the Story County Fair Board. And I would just like to go through that document and just summarize it very quickly. I would like to clarify, too, that I'm representing Story County Extension and not the Story County Fair Board. So this plan and this document was created by the Story County Extension Office.
Jess, this is John Passion calling. You sent that document to us?
I believe we did. my director and supervisor, Eugenia Hartsook, was in contact.
Did you see that?
No, I did not receive anything today.
Okay.
This is Lisa. I didn't see anything either.
Okay.
Hey, this is Lex. Hey, Stephanie, I thought I sent that to you with my stuff.
The only thing that came in was the chart this morning, and then you said that you might have some information for the fair that you'd send later today.
Okay.
Well, just so we get a copy of it, that would be great. Okay,
and I will do my best to summarize it for you just for this time. I will go through everything that is listed on that document, but to save time, but I'll try to cover everything as best as I can. During the Story County Fair, our 4-H youth who are in grade kindergarten through 12th grade participate in exhibit judging. We have static exhibits, which are displayed in a building, and then we have our livestock exhibits, our animals. On Wednesday the 22nd, as it stands now, with our 4-H static and livestock exhibit judging as usual, we will expect to serve around 292 people just to judge static exhibits. And that includes the exhibitors, so those youth in 4th through 12th grade, 4-H volunteers, the judges for the exhibits, and then extension staff. That does not include parents that may come with the exhibitors. So any number that I list will just include exhibitors, volunteers, judges, and extension staff. Later on in the week, so our county fair will go July 22nd to July 28th. Starting on Thursday, the 23rd, we do have livestock entering the grounds, and they will enter the grounds on Thursday, the 23rd, and Friday, the 24th. Those livestock stay on the grounds until Tuesday, July 28th, with livestock being judged from Friday, the 24th, to Tuesday, the 28th. Each livestock show averages about 30 to 50 people. And again, that's just including our exhibitors, our volunteers, our judges, and extension staff. With our traditional model, there would be really no way that we could utilize the current distancing and group size limits that are now in place, which is why we've developed a draft for a 4-H static and livestock exhibit judging with the social distancing and group size limits of 10 people or less. The state 4-H office made a task force and provided recommendations to each county extension office. And we have applied those recommendations into this possible plan, and we're really approaching the board to gain feedback and to get guidance. And we recognize that the guidelines may be lifted or they may be restricted more, and we do have a virtual model if needed. But if we can use this modified plan, that's what we hope to use, we'd like to make sure that we can fit the current restrictions, make sure that we're providing that safe and positive experience for 4-H'ers, volunteers, and judges and staff. So I would like to just quickly explain what that alternative method of 4-H static and livestock exhibit judging with the social distancing and group size limits in mind. So I did mention that we can expect to serve 292 people in one day for our static exhibits, which are the exhibits that are left in a building on display. This new proposed plan, we would hope to schedule exhibits that would be dropped off within at least 2 days to allow for sanitizing before our judges and volunteers would be in contact with them. And all of our judging would happen without exhibitors present, but just with judges present, we would have about 21 judges and would be able to provide space of at least 6 feet to them each, and we would provide masks to them. That would happen over the course from about 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. with 21 judges present and 3 staff members present. We typically have a bake sale and a 4-H food stand that are open, but we would plan on not having that this year. And then our livestock arrival and check-in, that typically happens on Thursday, July 23rd, and Friday, July 24th. And then with shows happening throughout the week, we would hope to have, again, a changed judging process. So all of our exhibitors would drop off at their exhibits and not be present for judging, which would really limit our people-to-people contact with that judge, just being there with a staff person and wearing masks and keeping a six-foot distance. There are a couple differences, which is outlined very clearly in a document that you will receive eventually. We do have a couple of shows that it is required that the exhibitor be present, so we would hope to have the exhibitor, a volunteer, and a judge there, and then that exhibitor would leave. Obviously, through these different livestock things, the exhibitors, so the youth and their families, would come in contact with a lot of different surfaces. So we would plan to disinfect and really control, try to keep an eye on who is in what buildings and how long they're there, and really just limiting a person-to-person contact. I guess we have a few questions on how we could increase sanitization on the ground, limit exposure from human to human, and then obviously continuing to honor the best biosecurity practices and how to maintain those practices in a public barn and just things like that. So I hope that was enough of a summary. I kind of rushed through it. So if you have any questions, I'm open to them now.
So those of you, this is John Passion talking, those of you from our veterinary sciences, what's your thoughts about all this? About especially the livestock exhibits?
This is Molly, and I think having that document in a little, you know, a few moments to process it and think about it will help me get some more feedback on this too. But at first blush, I think that you guys have thought through this quite well. I think, you know, I'm not seeing any huge red flags for something that is difficult to work around, especially when you're working with live animals. So the first question I have, I guess, it sounds like you have some protocols in place for livestock drop-off. I wondered if you have that for picking up the livestock, too, as well as caretaking of them, and if you have specific times you're working through for that and trying to limit the number of people in the barns at once, and if you have things related to that that you are offering as guidance for the 4-H'ers.
Yes, so we would schedule exhibitors to drop off their livestock exhibit in the morning, for example, and then they would drop off their exhibit, they would leave the barn and either go away in their car or leave the grounds. The animals would then be judged right that day, and the exhibitors would then be scheduled to pick up their animals. So it all happened either within the course of one day or in a morning or afternoon. Some of our species classes are smaller than others. They might not take a full day. So we would follow a pretty tight schedule, and we've also considered using the like a number call system. So as a vehicle arrives on the fairgrounds, they would receive a number and then wait in line for that number to be called. And really it would just be one exhibitor, since they are youth, we would have a parent present, one exhibitor, one parent, and then they would stall their animal and then leave the barn before the next family to start the process.
Okay, thanks, that helps. My other question that I have right now is, you mentioned providing masks and, you know, having social distance followed for the staff and the judges, at least for the static exhibits, and I assume since it's kind of individual, that applies to the livestock as well. Do you plan to require masks and kind of social distancing guidelines, you know, away from the judges and things like that for the parents and the youth that will be there as well?
Well, that was also one of my questions. So if we have exhibitors gaining entry to the grounds for a limited time, would we need to provide protective gear to them? Since it is a 4-H youth organization, or could it be like a bring your own mask type of situation? I guess we're looking for guidance on that as well. But yes, we would encourage social distancing of 6 foot or more. And then hopefully when judging is happening, the youth and the family or whoever would not be present. The only person present with the judge, it would be the judge himself or herself, and a staff member, and maybe a volunteer. So it would be at least probably only 3 people. I'm trying to limit that as much as possible.
Okay, I have a question. So could you require or recommend that people that enter the fairgrounds, including the judges, to bring their own mask? And our second question, will there be sanitizing stations available at the entry and at the fairgrounds?
So that is part of why we're reaching out to the Board of Health to what is our sanitation requirements and how many hand washing stations do we need to have, or about on a given day could be, I mean, 50 to 100 people. I don't necessarily have an answer to all of those questions, but we're really reaching out for guidance and what you as the Board of Health would suggest.
This is John Passion talking. The biggest thing that I would like to see is I would like to see basically everybody masked. I don't think you're going to be able to. I just remember the 4-H fairs that I grew up with, the idea of people always being 6 feet apart people just aren't going to do it. And you'll be able to do it while you're exhibiting the animals, but other than that, it's going to be really, really hard. But what you can do is request, require, whatever, that people wear masks. And you could even, and if they bring their masks, I think that would be great, but it would be nice, since you have like a month and a half to get this going, or almost 2 months to get this going, that we think of, you think about getting a supply of masks that you can supply people if they don't have one, and then just give it to them. And what you'll find is that if everyone or most people are wearing masks, the people who aren't wearing their masks will start to wear it. And that, I think, is the biggest primary thing you should do. The other thing is the hand sanitizing stations, I think that's really, really phenomenally important, that it's freely accessible, that people can clean their hands freely, and that they're in as many places as you can think about. Just because the more they see them, the more they're going to use them.
Right. Thank you. I would just like to clarify, because I know when I summarize this long document that you'll receive, I just want to make sure that I spoke this. So with our livestock judging and with our static judging, so our indoor projects and our animals, the exhibitors would essentially just be dropping their exhibit off and then leaving. They would not be in the barn. They would not walk there. Their livestock exhibit around a show ring, they wouldn't be sitting with a judge or standing next to a judge at all. The judge, it's what we call a non-conference judging experience. So those exhibitors would be passing through. I realize that there is no way to have a 6-foot distance at a regular traditional fair that we've held in the past. But thank you for your input about masking and having some provided and sanitizing stations.
I'll look forward to reviewing that document as all of us were, and maybe if we could place it on an agenda item for our routine Board of Health meeting in a couple of weeks.
Yes, and I just have a couple other questions while I still have your attention. We are also considering how would we limit the amount of individuals coming onto the ground, since it is a public fairground, and how would we enforce that? I know maybe you won't be able to answer that question, but if you have another resource, or if you could, like you said, in a couple weeks, be able to answer that question, or hopefully. And then we also need to think about our age considerations. So our target age is that kindergarten through 12th grade. So is there anything that we need to be aware of with that age group with the COVID-19 and how it may affect them?
Again, this is John Passion calling. For the younger kids, while nothing is 100%, statistically, they don't get sick as much, nor do they get as sick when they get COVID-19. It's more of the concern of the grandma or grandpa that comes along to look at their exhibit, or the fact that they'll go home to grandma or grandpa and possibly pass it on.
Okay.
You know, and the thing that you know, that's a, boy, I don't know. I can't even think of how you would decrease the amount of people at a state fair. I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. If anyone else from the Board of Health or anyone else out there has any ideas, man, I can't think of how you're going to decrease that.
Right.
This is Louisa. I do curbside pickup at, for example, Sam's Club, and there's always somebody counting the number of people coming in and another counting that's going out. So I don't know if I don't bother some, but can something like that be done? They have a clicker in their hands, you know?
But the county fairgrounds is too many places to enter. It's pretty
much. Yes, there's no gates on our fairgrounds.
Can that be limited to have one major entryway? Is that possible or not?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say, too. This is Molly, is seeing if there are ways for anyone that's on the site, even just for drop-off and pick-up, if you can kind of control the flow of traffic so that people are, like, one way as possible, that will help decrease exposure. So I think trying to figure out what those kind of engineering controls are that you could do, and then apply that to the public as well as possible. And then also education. So I don't know what kind of outreach you are doing for your judges and for your exhibitors for when you give them the guidance for drop-off and things like that and your volunteers, but that will be really important so they know what to expect. And then some sort of education for the public as well. So if there's signage and that kind of outlines what's happening, and what you recommend, you know, you can only, I think, probably control the public so much, but education would be a good thing to implement as much as possible.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Lisa, can I make another comment? Story County Board of Health gave a handout, the COVID-19 checklist, a one-page deal, which is very nice. Could something like that be handed out for protocols to follow? I really like this one page that was handed out.
You mean, Louisa, you mean that one page that we approved?
The COVID-19 checklist.
That's
great,
yeah.
But also a one-page, not like this, but a protocol that can be handed out at the entry. You know what I'm talking about?
Right,
the
I do.
The one that we approved.
Right.
And it's something like that, but not exactly like that, but for a protocol. Like Molly mentioned and Les mentioned, so some kind of protocol that can be handed out, a one page that's very clear what folks should be aware of and do.
And that's something that we would make available to all of our exhibitors and judges and participants. A real simple form with our processes,
yes,
as well as information related to health and safety with the COVID. Definitely we would have that, as well as signage throughout with reminders of the basics of protection with the COVID virus spread.
What are you having as far as the equestrian event? Are you going to have the traditional parks event?
That would be a chance for a way to respond to, as the fair board, if you're thinking of like the wood carving.
The horse show event, are you going to have those? Traditionally, there have been like a horse show with different events for the kids.
Right, a horse show, yes. So with our traditional fair model, we would plan on having four shows. I'm hoping I'm hearing you right. I'm sorry, sometimes phone calls can really mess that up.
Yeah, are you going to have a traditional, you've got a problem in the barn keeping separation, and you've got a problem in the events in the arena keeping your separation as well.
Right. So with our traditional model, yes, we still plan on having a horse show, but with this new proposed exhibit judging with social distancing and group size limits, that when you receive the document, you'll see we would postpone the horse shows until August, because there's really no way to judge a horse show without our exhibitors present, and we wouldn't be able to keep exhibitor numbers with the judges, volunteers, and staff under 10 people at one time. We typically see about 54 people at those at each horse show.
So you're going to postpone those until August, okay?
Yes, possibly. This is all still a draft. We haven't finalized anything, but yes.
Jeff, I have two more.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Mark. Two more quick questions for you. One is kind of related to your triggers, I guess, for moving. You said you had a virtual option too that, you know, you were hoping to not use, and the current one is, the current model that you're sharing with us is using those social distancing guidelines and small group size requirements. Are they just those two models, or do you have an interim one as well if restrictions are loosened somewhat, but not as much as a regular fair model?
We have our regular fair model, which with just judging as usual, and then we have that proposed with social distancing and group size limits, and then we do have a virtual option. Those are the three options that we've been focusing on.
Yeah.
So you would move. Sorry. So you would move straight to the virtual option if basically if any more stringent requirements were placed?
Yes. Like I said earlier too, just with our average numbers at each livestock show or at each 4-H or Story County Extension sponsored event during Fair Week, we typically see it ranges from about 15 to 75 people. That's where we're at.
Okay, so, Jeff, thank you very much for giving us this heads up.
I have one question, too, here.
What are you going to do with the food stand?
This is Wade Kaler with the Story County Fair Association, president of the Story County Fair Association. And we have a meeting in June coming up. And we know the fair is not going to look like what the fair looks today. We're probably going to come back with you guys with some other options that we might discuss and maybe say, hey, we want to look at this. What do you guys think about this? As of right now, a lot of the stuff is still up in the air. We're just kind of running through the scenarios, what we could do. What you're hearing is strictly coming from the extension. What they're recommending, as a fair board association, we may decide to go another route, just to kind of see how this thing is all going to play out in the next few weeks.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I have a question for Jeff here. Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, this is Mark Speck. So would it be too much for you to when your participants are coming in and your judges and your exhibitors, would it be too much to do a temperature check and a question, ask them some questions as they're coming in through the gate?
That is something that I hadn't considered, but we can discuss that too. That's a very good idea.
Right. Well, listen, I think what I'd like to do is I'd like to get a hold of that paper from the Extension Service and give us a chance to kind of review it, because it sounds like, at least from what Jeff tells us, that it's a pretty detailed piece of paper. And then and it'll be interesting. So, Wade, when is your meeting going to be?
We got a meeting, I believe it's June 4th.
Okay, so that will be... So our routine meeting is June
2nd.
Oh, I think we'll be...
It's June 2nd.
Oh, June 2nd? June 2nd. Oh, shoot. Okay. So,
okay. I take that back. Our meeting is June 2nd. Is that a Monday?
Tuesday.
Our meetings are usually on Tuesday, June 2nd.
Okay. Maybe our
June,
on Monday.
June 1st.
June 1st.
Yours is on Monday? Oh, fantastic. So ours is on... So I think I'd like to, if you can get us any information, Jess, if you guys can get us anything. Otherwise, I think you guys should be part of our agenda item at our routine Board of Health meeting. Okay?
This is Stephanie. Jess, if you can stay on until after the meeting, and then also someone from the Fair Board, and I'll give you my contact information. And it'll be easier to get stuff put on the agenda that way.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Okay.
I just sent out the document, so everyone should have that in their email now.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so we're not going to make any decision on this, but we will table it, and hopefully we'll get Paul a chance to read that. I'm sure that very excellent document that just been emailed to us. Okay, all right, thank you very much. Okay, so now we're going to move on to item 3, discussion and consideration whether the Board of Health should provide a report to the Board of Supervisors at weekly meetings. We'll need our guidance on our ex officio members to help us with this. This has been brought up to me that during this COVID outbreak, whether it is needed that someone from the Board of Health addresses the Board of Supervisors. In the past, we used our ex officio member to let the Board of Supervisors know the things we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Which I've always been very comfortable with, but does the Board of Supervisors or those of us in the Board of Health wish for somebody from the Board of Health to be called into the meeting so we can answer questions about something that happens with COVID, especially during this healthcare emergency?
Sure. So this is Lisa. So yeah. So generally, I do an update. You know, if we've had a meeting, I start to provide to my colleagues. We have a board meeting tomorrow. I could certainly bring it up to them to ask them if they would like someone, either from the Board of Health, to come to their meetings, and if so, how often. I mean, besides me, to answer any additional questions and answer some questions. The supervisors have had less participate in some meetings, so she has provided input as well.
Okay.
Just on what's kind of going on in Story County from the public health standpoint. So certainly, I mean, I'm happy to hear what other members of the Board of Health feel, but I can certainly ask my colleagues tomorrow at our board meeting, one, if they would like something more regular, and if so, how often they would like that.
Okay. So, so what's everyone else's thoughts on that? Board of Health members?
I'm comfortable with the current arrangement, unless somebody wants somebody in particular to report on something. I see no need for additional representation.
Okay.
Yeah, this is my name. I would be, this is Louisa Tabava. If needed, I would also be available if additional information is needed.
Molly?
Yeah, I was going to say I agree with John that in general, probably the current arrangement works just fine, and maybe at special request, other Board of Health members or less or whoever would be most appropriate to join.
Mark?
Yeah, I'm fine with that as well.
You know, I gotta admit, I concur. I agree with all of you too. I think that the current arrangement is fine, but I kind of like the idea that Lisa Heddens will be bringing it in front of the Board of Supervisors and see if they have other thoughts. Okay? All right. So do we need a motion, or is that good enough?
I think it's good enough.
Okay, very good.
I will reply back to you after the meeting tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. All right. So so let's go around now with comments from the board. Mark Speck, do you have any comments?
I have none.
John?
None.
Molly?
None, thank you.
Louisa?
No, thank you.
Okay. Lisa, any further comments?
No, not at this time.
Okay. And the only comment that I have is we have purchased a acreage in Hamilton County, but it is not going to be our permanent home. It'll be kind of a weekend place. It's near Little Wall Lake. So just in case any of you see a real estate transfer in the newspaper. Okay.
Congratulations.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how the barn does. Okay. All right.
Enjoy.
Yep. All right. So with no further comments, I would like to call for an adjournment.
So moved.
Mark Speck moved and John Kluge seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye. Mark?
Aye.
John?
Aye.
Molly?
Aye.
Louisa?
Aye.
And John? So moved and so passed, and we're adjourned. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Okay, thank you very much for doing this extra meeting. Okay, Stephanie, do you need me for anything before I sign off?
No, I don't. I just need the information from Jess and the Fair Board.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Jess, are you still there? Is someone from the Fair Board still there?
Yes, this is Wade Kalis.
Okay.
Eugenia's still here. I can take that.
Okay.
Or Jack.
Okay. So I post the agendas and